wanted to come to Montreal for reasons. I met my future wife, and I was going to move. And so she didn't like New Jersey, so I said, well, I'll see if I can get a job in Montreal. And applied to the Gazette and wrote a letter to the Star. And got a letter back from the sports editor of the Star, Red Fisher, saying, we're on strike, you idiot. And will be for the foreseeable future. And there you go. That was my first encounter with Red.
Michael Farber in the last half hour with us on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690 on the great Red Fisher, who passed away at the age of 91. Michael's obit in the Gazette just tweeted it out for you. Along with Mitch Gallo, Dave Trentadue sitting in for Rod Francis. We will take you to game night, Habs and Capitals in Washington, D.C. Knuckles Nyland will be joining us, another very good friend of Red Fisher's, in about 30 minutes.
Hockey insider Pierre Maguire, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub, with six locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
That is a tough one to hear. Living legend when he was with us, larger than life character, eccentric beyond belief, intelligent beyond your own imagination, and loyal as a day is long. That was Red. That was Red Fisher. He was a conundrum. He was in a lot of different places. I remember one time telling me, I'm going to die in a hotel room on the road because that's the way I like to live.
In a corner room in a hotel. As Michael writes it in his obit, he was somewhat quirky, and he always wanted to stay, always did stay in a corner room in a hotel.
Yep. There's so many different stories I could tell you. Michael would know more because they used to have legendary dinners, I think, right around the holiday season. Michael Farber, Michael's wife, Red Fisher, and Red's wife. And I would hear some of the stories from Michael afterwards. They were all great stories, obviously. How did Red get his name? He got his name because his hair was red. We didn't know him. You and I didn't
I never knew him to have red hair.
We never knew him with his head being red. But, you know, the other thing that's interesting, he used to tell me he used to shine shoes, you know, when he was a kid to make extra money. And one of the big things was he was a left-hander when he would punch. If you would mess around with him, you could tell he was a lefty. And he probably was pretty good with his left hand, too, throwing punches. There are so many. I remember him telling me about riding the train with Rocket Richard and him being taped to the sleeping bunk by the guys, and they shaved him.
Yeah, there was an initiation.
The initiation was they shaved him.
Yep.
You know, there's so many, Mitch, I could tell you that. But the one thing that he was great, I remember him coming up to me when I had just started on the radio. And he says, you're doing well. You're doing really well. But you got to stop saying one thing. I go, what's that? I'll do it. Like, you tell me. I'll do whatever you tell me. He goes, don't ever say again that a guy's got a brilliant future ahead of him. It's redundant. Just say he's got a brilliant future. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
It was important. It was important if you got the stamp of approval from Red. And he didn't hand out compliments easy. But when he did, you know, in my instance, the same thing, Pierre, it meant so much to me that he took an interest in my work. And when he first mentioned my name in his column when I started doing a talk show in the early 90s, I can't begin to explain to people what that meant for somebody doing what I did at the time.
Oh, absolutely. You're not embellishing either. You're probably underselling that. He wouldn't talk to rookie players. You could have been Guy Lafleur, and he wouldn't talk to you. You had to spend 1 year in Red's purgatory. He wouldn't talk to you. That was just part of the rule. Rookies weren't addressed. I mean, there were so many. I remember once we sat on a plane from San Jose to Minnesota, Minnesota to Montreal. It was a long day. It was long. And he said, you know, I've been on some tough train trips, some tough plane rides, but at least they fed me more than peanuts. Oh, there's so many. And, you know, He wasn't a big drinker, but he liked to have a little scotch.
He liked his shivas.
Yeah, he liked to have a little shivas, a little scotch. And
do you remember back in the day at the Forum, you were scouting. So if you were in the press room, it's because you were scouting back then, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he had his own little bottle.
He had his own bottle of Chivas, yeah. Which I think at the Bell Center, initially when the Bell Center opened, there were still alcohol served to members of the media after the game. And Red did have his private bottle of Chivas there as well. We used to do, I used to host the Habs Hot Stove show on Saturday nights at the Forum, Pierre. On a Saturday, when I was hired by Ted Blackman, and he put the show together, which was kind of an update on the old Hot Stove of the 60s. And for a younger guy like myself to be surrounded by Red Fisher and Dick Irvin and Danny Gallivan, who guessed it often, even though he'd already just retired, can you imagine what that was like? And Red, I'd walk into the press room and I'd have to be on the air at 6, so it would be about 5:30, and Red would be sitting there and he'd be nursing his Chivas on the rocks and he'd slowly work his way through it, and by the time the hot stove was over, he'd be done.
Yeah, no, that must have been intimidating, to be honest with you.
It was fun. It was fun because I didn't have to say much. All I did was, you know, throw a name out or a team out or a year out, and I just sit back and listen to these people. How fortunate we were, that generation. We talk about it a lot. We were spoiled rotten by the team on the ice, but the people who covered the team on the ice matched the level of the team on the ice in terms of talent.
Oh, yeah. Dick Irvin and Danny Gallivan, if you're a young person listening to this, they were as good as there ever was in the history of this broadcast business doing games. They were legendary. Red Fisher was off the charts phenomenal. You know, René Lecavalier, Jean Paget. I can go, you know, there's so many that you remember that were so good. And you know what, Mitch? I remember delivering the Montreal Star with the Laprise brothers in TMR. And Red Fisher worked for the Star. He didn't work for the Gazette. He was writing for the Star. And then he switched over. I think when the Star went out of business, he switched over.
That's
right. Montreal used to have two Anglophone papers, one in the morning and one in the afternoon.
Yeah, he was one of those guys you knew when the Star sadly died as the result of a long, drawn-out labor dispute. There was no way the Gazette wasn't going to take Red Fisher. I don't know how many writers they hired, but you were worried that some of your favorite, in my case, some of my favorite writers of the Star, would they emerge in the Gazette? Didn't think twice that Red Fisher was going to end up covering the Canadiens for the Montreal Gazette. And he was the longest-running beat writer in the history of the National Hockey League.
That I did not know.
Yeah.
He was very good at not bragging about himself. He kept it straight. I never knew that. I knew a lot about him, but I didn't know that. That's a great one. That's a lot of train rides, a lot of bus rides, a lot of bad coffee, and a lot of plane rides. That's living.
I'm sorry?
No, I wasn't kidding before when he said to me, you know, McGuire, when I die, I'm going to die in a hotel room on the road. That's my choice. So he told me.
You know, I have interviewed thousands of people in the past during my 58-year career with the Star and then with the Gazette. I have not met not one athlete who was as kind to his fans. Kind. I mean, that's a word that you rarely hear when it involves athletes. But this was Jean Béliveau. He had a big smile for everybody. He had unbelievable patience with everybody. He is one of the very, very few athletes that I've known over the years. I've known John for 60 years. He is one of the very few athletes who never, ever refused to autograph something for someone.
There was Red making a rare radio appearance in this instance with the CBC in the aftermath of Jean Béliveau passing away. I also remember Red Fisher doing color with Dick Irvin. Stu Hackle, our good friend Stu Hackle, was one of the guys that Dick would pick up in the New York area, and I'm not sure who some nights he worked alone, but I do remember vividly Red Fisher doing color on a lot of Montreal Canadiens broadcasts on CFCF radio back in the day.
Yeah, I don't remember that as well. I'm sure we probably listened to the same ones. I just remember what a man, he portrayed a game in a way. You know, sometimes game stories are mundane, they're kind of boring. He always found a way to make them interesting. You know, he always, with slick little editorialization, if that's even a word, but he was really good at that. He made game stories fun to read.
He was
really
a master. He was a master. I was just telling Michael Farber in the last half hour, Pierre, that I carried for years around the game story by Red Fisher of May of 71 when the Canadians beat the Blackhawks in Game 7 in Chicago Stadium to win the Cup. That was just – it was my favorite Cup, but the way that Red wrote about it, anytime I wanted to go back there, it just – I felt like I was in the middle of the rink in May of 71 reading that story.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I remember, this is a good one, going in the Stanley Cup Final in 92, and the Gazette sent Red down, and he was talking to me, and he's like, I hear you live with Bowman. I said, I do. It's been great. He goes, how could you do that? It must be hard. He never sleeps. He's always watching hockey. I said, that's kind of what I do, too. And then he said, let me tell you some stories about when he was in St. Louis. And it was just, he had a story on everybody in the league. It could be Glenn Sather, Rocket Richard, John Beliveau, Scotty Bowman. And he'd always, you know, that little evil grin that he would have on his mouth. He'd kind of like smirk a little, but he never made it nasty. He always made it funny. He always made it in good humor. That's what I liked about him. He was always, even if he was mad at you, he found a way to make you feel better.
Yeah, he had this gruff exterior. It's almost like a stereotype, but underneath it all, what most, you know, he could be ornery, right?
Oh yeah.
But man, if he liked you, you were friends for life.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just so blessed to have known him when he was still top of it, and we traveled together a lot on the airplanes in those days. And he gave a lot of good advice. He was really, really good. I'm really grateful for having known him. Really grateful.
Red had his ways. I think he liked being a curmudgeon. I think that was his go-to move. When Alain Vigneault became coach of the Canadiens, he called Red at home and said, Mr. Fisher, Alain Vigneault, I'm the new coach of the Canadiens. I'd like to talk to you about our team. Take you to lunch. He shouldn't have called it our team. Red got his hackles up, and he said, no, I'll see you in training camp. So he told the coach. In fact, Vigneault said, you know, Mr. Fisher, I know you don't talk to rookies, but Red wouldn't go to lunch with him.
Once again, Michael Farber, between 4:35.
I can totally see that. Can totally see that.
That's when you worked. That's when you worked in the booth, right?
I had just started. Alain and I had worked together in Ottawa, and then Alain and Rick Bonus got fired and taken off the road with Chico Rush and put on the bench. But no, I knew when Alain got the job in Montreal, I had just gotten it. So again, that's when I was spending a ton of time with Red. I don't remember that instance, but I remember Michael telling me that story, and that's typical Red. He wanted to make sure you knew that he was still in charge. It was good, too. He was smart the way he did it.
Even Keith Oberman weighing in via Twitter. The first hockey writer I remember anybody going out of their way to read. This was 50 years ago, and he was already a giant.
You know, it's a great... You speak about giants, Mitch. You'll know this, and if you've talked about it already, just stop me, and I'll stop. But, you know, the Hall of Fame jacket's a really important thing. And once you're admitted to the Hall of Fame, it's an amazing thing to have the Hall of Fame blazer. And it says honored member. Well, Red was promised by Clarence Campbell when he got in, his blazer would always say honored member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. Well, they took the honored part away from the media people. So you know what Red did?
I know. Go ahead.
He sent his jacket back and said, get everything with my name out of here.
That's right.
I don't want to be part of this.
And there are people,
a man that was principled.
And there are people who tried and tried and tried for years over and over again for him to reverse his decision, and he refused.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's absolutely correct. I always, you know, it was interesting. He used to tell stories about Glenn Sather at summer camp. In Alberta, and Red would go out there, and he would talk about how all those guys would let their hair down and really help underprivileged kids and things like that. And that meant a lot to Red. That meant a lot to Red when he would see that kind of stuff.
All right, let's finish off for now. We're going to pick up with Knuckles in about 15 minutes on the death of Red Fisher at the age of 91. At the draft, Mitch, which draft was this? Red had just retired. He announced his retirement.
This was, if I'm not mistaken, this is 2012, so it's the draft in Pittsburgh when the Canadians took Galchenyuk.
Okay, so you know what the scene is, right? If you're not a rights holder, if you're you're not a national media guy, there's the barrier between the floor of the draft and where the media is, and everybody's leaning over the barrier trying to get quotes in between rounds or when the draft is wrapping up. In this instance, the draft had wrapped up. We're doing live programming. I wanted to get Glenn Sather on to talk about his good friend Red Fisher. But there was a scrum of like a two or three dozen people talking to Glenn over the barrier. He finishes up. He starts walking back towards the Rangers table, and I just yell, "Red Fisher." And Glenn turns around, and he sees me. I wave him over. I explain what we want to do. He says, "Sure." And he comes over and he sits at our table for 15 minutes to talk about Red Fisher. We're going to play that in its entirety a little later in the show. Here's just a little snippet right at the beginning.
What number did you wear with the Habs?
6.
Just want to let our younger people listening.
And the year I was there, I played with Henri Richard and Jimmy Roberts. And then Henri Richard tore his ankle up. I was really disappointed. He was a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was so, and again, keeping you a little longer here, but so was there any kind of regret? And you know, you turned things around in Edmonton, but you just missed that 4 in a row.
Well, I told Red when I left, funny story, Red told me that I was going to be traded. And I said, no, I just talked to Scotty Bowman for an hour about, positional play on our team and what I thought we could do in practice. He says, you're going to be traded for sure. And he was right. it was a good experience. I enjoyed Montreal, and I really enjoyed Red. And it's unfortunate that he's retired, because I think he was a very important part of this league, and he was good for everybody.
All right, so actually that was at the very tail end of the conversation with Glenn Sather that we'll hear a little bit later. Red seemed to know when the trades were going down before anybody else.
Oh, for sure. For sure. He was, I think, the only one he may have missed on that was really big.
Oh, boy.
He missed on the Gretzky trade.
Oh, I think we talked about that with Glenn in the conversation.
Yeah,
Red was angry.
Red
was very angry considering who was involved. His best friend on the planet was the general manager of the Oilers, and he didn't get the trade because he was away after he thought he was told nothing will go down while he was on vacation. And, of course, everything changed in 88.
That's correct.
All right.
That's the one he missed on, and he was not happy. I think your good friends, Mr. McKenzie and Mr. Miller, broke that one.
Ah, I wasn't aware of who broke it. I just know that Red was quite upset about it. Okay, just a couple of minutes on the game tonight, and we'll get back to Red with Chris Nyland in just a few minutes. And we hope a couple of other people after 6 o'clock. Sir Savard will be joining us after 6 o'clock. Tonight in Washington, it's a back-to-back for the Capitals. They lost in overtime on a goal by Taylor Hall to New Jersey. What would you expect from a Canadian standpoint against a Capitals team playing back-to-back but having lost last night?
Well, I think Montreal will bring a good game. I think Washington will play well. New Jersey dictated most of that game last night. Washington was fortunate to get a point. They really were. But I would think, I talked to you the other day about it, and I feel strongly about it. I think Montreal will bring a good effort. I don't know if it'll be enough. That's a good Washington team. Just the center ice play, it's tough for Montreal. They don't have Kuznetsov. They don't have Backstrom. They don't have Beagle. They don't have Eller. They don't have that. They don't have that down the middle. I think that's going to be what swings a game Washington's way.
And they don't have this guy.
McAvoy poked it ahead. Bergeron pivots right wing. He hits Marchand in the backhand. Spins around to check. Tripped up. We got a penalty upcoming. Delayed call. Fired out in front. They score! Patrice Bergeron turns around. Sweeps it home. That's a hat trick! Bergeron gives the Bruins a 4-1 lead here in Brooklyn.
He's getting better, isn't he, Pierre?
He is getting better because he works. His skating's not any better. You wouldn't call him the fastest player in the league, but his brain works like a supercomputer. He digests the game probably better than any player in the league right now. He just understands where to be. He knows where to move the puck. He understands time and space concepts. He's as brilliant as any player in the league.
And just before we go, a couple of significant injuries. Kevin Shattenkirk, apparently.
Oh, bad one. Yep.
He's done for the year, and apparently he's been playing with this issue in his knee for a while. And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, gone for 5 weeks with a cracked rib.
Yep, those are two big ones. And I think Nugent-Hopkins, because Ryan has been out there, a lot of trade discussion, that'll be an interesting one to watch. I think Edmonton saw that as potentially moving him with Drysdale and McDavid. If they move him, maybe they can keep Letestu to its center. Now it becomes harder. I don't know if anybody will want to bite on that. 5 or 6 weeks takes you to the trade deadline, and you're missing a lot of prime-time hockey, so I don't know how that plays out for Edmonton. But that's a big loss. I don't see them making the playoffs, but that's a big loss in terms of how they address the trade deadline.
Some fond memories of Red Fisher from Pierre McGuire, who was working the Canadiens radio broadcasts for several years while Red was doing his thing. Thanks as always, Pierre. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again on Monday.
We sure will, my friend. Thanks a lot. And to the Fisher family, we're all thinking of you. We're praying for you. And, hey, Red, if you're listening, I'll play from San Jose to Mini to Montreal. Service more than peanuts. I'll never forget that.
He had all these tics, kind of redisms, you know, bottle it chaps, and, you know, with gusts too. And
my,
you know,
great and good friend.
Great and good friend. I mean, these were redisms. I mean, they were kind of typewriter tics that he had, or later on computer tics, and they were lovely, and no one else could do that.